This is Meet the Movie Press. It's September the 6th, 2019. On the show today, Tiff and Telluride, Spider-Nide, Tomb Raider, It Chapter 2, and other bits and bobs. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Meet the Movie Press.
This is Meet the Movie Press. It is September the 6th, 2019, and what a show we have for you today. Two esteemed colleagues on the show, and a reunion that has not been more hyped since PB&J. And oh, talc and a slightly sweaty groin, it's myself and Mr. Jeff Snyder. Jeff.
Oh my God, it's great to be back MTMP.
It's nice to have you back. It's been over a year.
Yeah, oh my God, and I've missed you. I've missed you so. I've missed your musk.
Like the deserts miss the rain.
It's lovely. You got a new studio here.
I know. We're now in a strip club.
Yeah. 4K, I heard.
I'm a private dancer. Dancer for money. I'll be what you want me to be, as Tina Turner once said. Jeff, for those people who might not know who you are and where you're from, who are you? Who are those people? Who are you and where can we find your work?
I am the senior film reporter at Collider. Collider.com. You can find me on Collider Videos all the time. Movie Talk, The Snyder Cut, my podcast, The In Snyder on Cameo, all that good stuff.
You don't have enough to do?
Yeah, really.
And on social media, you are?
The In Snyder.
Fantastic. And Jimmy Oster is back. Jimmy O. Jimmy, for those people who don't know who you are, first of all, welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
Who are you and where can we find your work, please?
Jimmy O, James Oster. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Arrow in the Head, Joe Blow, my sites. You can find me on all the whatever. Cameo, I'm new on Cameo. Ooh. So, hey, yeah. Very exciting.
Word
very
up.
Exciting. And I'm excited to be here for this reunion. It just gives me chills.
It's kind of a special day.
Yes.
It's kind of a special day. It's lovely. We've kind of not been back together. You know, it's just nice to have you back.
I feel love.
I'm delighted. I mean, they got to get us on Movie Talk together on Collider
one
of these days.
Yeah, that would be great, actually.
I'll advocate for it.
People in the chat are already excited about this. Obviously, you are a big part of the show. Without you, audience, there's no point in us being here at all. Already in the chat today, BlackRock316, good morning to all. Kame Egan, good morning, movie fans. Lick My Love Pump, good morning. It's the return of the great In Snyder.
What kind of viewers have you attracted to this show in my absence?
The question is, have we attracted viewers to this show? That's the thing. Yash, greetings from Toronto, gentlemen. Ryan Nilsson, hello, y'all. Ryan, who's obviously part of the in-house team here at Popcorn Talk. Xeno Hour, hello, Carson Bertrand, so hyped for this. Carson, the pressure is on. We hope we do not disappoint. Lick My Love Pump, good morning, gentlemen and gentlewomen. Senor Nerd, throwback MTMP with Snyder returning home.
Word.
Like Michael MTMP. Myers. Word.
Wow.
Word. Okay, so a lot to get through on this show this week. Let's start off, first of all, with a couple of things about Tiff and Telluride. I asked you both to pick three things that you want to talk about. Jeff, let's start off with, first of all, one of your picks.
I guess we have to talk about Parasite. Again, I haven't seen any of these movies.
Okay.
I didn't go to any of the fall festivals. Not cool. But Parasite is the movie that really came out of Telluride, I think, with like just this enormous amount of buzz. I know it already screened. I think it can.
Yeah.
But it seemed like it has sort of cemented its place as the front runner for the foreign language Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
And it also seems like a threat to make it into the actual Best Picture race, along with the Best Director race. Remember last year we had Pavel Pavlikowski nominated for Cold War. I think as the Academy sort of opens up its membership, you're going to see more international filmmakers nominated.
And Cold War last year was a movie that a lot of people didn't either see or engage with. Around it.
No, nothing.
And so this year it's really interesting to see that something which could become a very strong foreign language contender is a movie that people, in the nicest possible way, care about, which is possibly the longest time in probably 5 or 6 years, I think, people have engaged with a movie of this kind in this way.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the Bong Hive, you know? I mean, there's no Pavel Hive.
So. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Pavel Hive.
But yeah, I'm excited to see it. I think Neon has been on a hot streak. I've been begging Neon to get me into a screening because this movie doesn't really come out until like late December. I think if they've been starting to screen it though around town.
Yeah, they have.
So yeah, I can't wait to take it in and feast on it. It's
supposed
to be a sumptuous
feast on the Parasite.
Delight.
Well, I'm a big fan of his work anyway. And I had an invite for this probably about 2 months ago, like a really really early one. I simply didn't have time to see it, even though it was on my list of things that I wanted to see.
Time. He's
things
too busy.
Have changed, Mr. Snyder. But some things have stayed the same. But it is definitely one of the movies that I am really looking forward to seeing this awards season. There are some that are leaving me cold right now. This is definitely on my list as well.
And I still have no idea really what it's about.
No.
Like, I haven't been reading the reviews too closely.
Yeah.
I kind of want to be surprised. I have an idea that it's about class.
Yeah.
And it's an examination of class. But yeah, beyond that, I don't want to know too many specifics.
There isn't there isn't enough movies where you go in blind these days,
right,
which is going to be actually very refreshing. Okay, Jimmy, something from you on this.
Yeah, you know what? I guess I'll start. I've been fascinated with Mr. Rogers ever since the documentary. I cannot wait to see Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers. That just excites me to no end. I think we need this right now. I think we as a society need his story to be told. What an amazing human being. What an amazing story there is there.
Yeah.
And it's after seeing that documentary, I was just so moved and so just so I cannot wait to see what they do with this. And come on, that trailer?
The trailer got me.
Oh my God.
It totally got me.
Yeah, it got me with all the feels, man.
Do you think how much of that do you think is because of the movie and Mr. Rogers himself, and how much is because of Tom Hanks?
I think it's a little bit of both,
okay,
to be honest. Again, that documentary, I think, opened a lot of people's eyes. I didn't know all those stories. Mm. You know, if I was a kid, I would watch that. I wouldn't think, oh, well, he's really cool in diversity. Oh, really? It's just this really interesting story that I don't think any of us really realized, and how wonderful a man he was.
Well, I mean, the documentary was one of the best films of last year. It was absolutely terrific. I couldn't believe it wasn't nominated for an Oscar.
I agree.
What an egregious snub.
I do wonder why. I genuinely
do. Well, because it was just
why.
Piecing together archival stuff. Like,
right.
You know, there was an explanation. There was a method behind the madness, I think, in that case, whether
that,
it was fair
way.
Or not. But, like, you know, with this movie, just to see the effect of Mr. Rogers has on one man, you know, because that's how it sort of starts.
Yeah.
And I like that idea, and Matthew Reese is obviously a really good actor. So, yeah.
I can't wait.
No, it's something that I'm certainly really, really personally excited to see. One thing I'm slightly concerned about is how it's going to translate internationally, because Mr. Rogers was a very American thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's going to play particularly well at home, but I think overseas, it's really going to rely on people wanting to see it as a Tom Hanks movie,
right, sure,
and caring about it in that way. But I think certainly there's going to be the interest. In the same way that La La Land is a very L.A.-type movie, and, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is still a very L.A. movie,
mm-hmm,
and sometimes these translate to other audiences and sometimes they don't. So I think it's going to be really interesting what happens with that.
Yeah.
Jeff, your second piece.
My second one was going to be The Vast of Night, which is just like this really teeny tiny sci-fi movie that I've heard nothing but good things about. I remember I had lunch with this young producer, J.D. Lifshitz, and he turned me on to it, and I've been in touch with the producers trying to get a look at a link. You know, I was this close to getting one, and then they said, oh, we can't do it because we got into a festival, which was Toronto.
Right.
But I think it played Sundance as well. I'm just saying, this is the sort of low-budget genre movie that I like would kill to see at like a Midnight Madness at Toronto or Park City at Midnight, whatever it is. And I think that this filmmaker, there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on this guy. I'm drawing a blank on the name. I didn't come prepared. I think it may be like Andrew Patterson or something.
That's right,
like
it's
that.
Andrew Patterson. Yep.
Okay, yeah. There you go. But he's the kind of guy who I think Blumhouse could go after for something of theirs.
Interesting.
Or, you know, maybe join the James Wan factory. Who knows? But he's definitely someone to keep an eye on.
Okay, your next thing, Jimmy.
You know what? One of the ones that sticks out to me, just because I think I was a fan of hers as an actress, Chris Lemons, is her directing Harriet.
Oh, Cassie Lemons, yeah.
Yeah, okay, Cassie Lemons. It looks like such an interesting project. It looks like an interesting film. I haven't seen a trailer. I've seen nothing for it. But I don't know. I like the idea of this. I've been a fan of hers for a while, when I get her name right. But I love the idea of this story, particularly at this time. I think it's a good story, and I want to hear it.
For those people who aren't aware of her previous work, what has she done before this?
She's done a lot of little things.
Did she do Eve's Bayou?
Yeah, I think that was one.
And,
she's
Jodie Foster's friend in The Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And Candyman. She was in the... She was the...
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Jeff, something else from you.
Oh, well, first of all, I am also looking forward to Harriet. I've heard Cynthia Erivo is terrific in that movie. Mm. The third movie I have on my list is The Sound of Metal. This is one that's sort of going under the radar. It's the one with Riz Ahmed as a drummer who's losing his hearing.
Yep. Mm.
I think that that guy is a fantastic actor. I've thought so, you know, since I saw him in Nightcrawler. Yep. I thought he's terrific in The Night Of. And this is from Darius Marder, who I believe co-wrote The Place Beyond the Pines, which is one of my favorite movies of the last decade. So I'm definitely intrigued by this one and excited to see what they come up with.
Could this potentially be the one that sees Riz cross over from being that guy who's in a lot of great things to being actually really appreciated by Hollywood? Because Hollywood is obviously using him in a number of ways over the last five or six years, but he hasn't had that role.
I mean, I don't know if this is going to be the one. It's a pretty small film, but... I think that guy's definitely poised for some major like tentpoles in the years ahead for sure.
Yeah. What do you think is going to be take, do you think, for audiences to appreciate him in the way that Hollywood's appreciating him?
I mean, it'll probably take a sort of, you know, like an awards contender, like a Slumdog Millionaire or something like that.
Or just a big box office that no one really cares about, but it makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's ultimately what it's going to be about if his movies make a lot of money. And if he gets that one role and that movie gets it, that hits the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Jimmy, your third piece.
You know, I was looking at it and I was like, I was mixed because I want to see Honey Boy really bad. Mm-hmm.
A lot of really good word coming out of that. You've seen that, right, Jeff?
Nope. Honey
Boy? Yeah. Oh, I thought you'd seen it.
They don't mean nothing these days.
That, I mean, I was going to do Ford versus Ferrari, but I think Honey Boy is the one that just fascinates me more. So because I got the chance to interview Shia years and years and years ago when he was just a young lad in Disturbia, and I'm curious to see how he's changed, and I love the director. I've met her. She's an amazing woman, amazing talent. That one I'm stoked for. I can't wait to. I hope it's big, not only for him but for her.
Yeah,
she's a visionary director. So let's see more from her.
I think with Shia, I think because he became so popular so quickly, and Hollywood was like stick him in everything. I think actually the quite rapid fall from grace as Transformers became more popular, and obviously he had a lot of personal issues, and then he was kind of ostracized by the industry for a while, partly by himself and partly by the industry. He wanted to separate himself from it. I think actually that time in the wilderness has been the best thing that could have ever happened to Shia.
It might have, it may have,
because in the last couple of years he's done a couple of pieces of work where people have gone, okay, there's more to Shia.
No, he's a great actor, and that's what people forget. He is a really talented actor. He makes a lot of interesting choices, especially lately.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it could be the film to get him back.
I mean, I think the Peanut Butter Falcon kind of already did that.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's one of my favorite indies of the year. I think Shia is one of the best actors of his generation, and I'm looking forward not just to seeing him in Honey Boy, but to, you know, seeing if he gets any traction with his script. He also wrote the script, and he's also the lead. He's all tatted up in David Ayer's The Tax Collector. Like, that first image that they release of him was like the kind of image that puts your jaw on the floor. So, I think it's definitely he's having a moment.
Okay.
Yeah, he is.
Joker seems to be something that everybody's talking about from the festivals as well. Got an 8-minute standing ovation the other day.
Who is timing these things? It's I've gone to these festivals. I never recall seeing major reporters and critics break out their timepiece. Like, what?
Is that a
stopwatch?
You think maybe it's a little exaggerated?
Ridiculous.
It is a weird thing. Who cares? I mean, just say, the audience loved it. Perfect.
What is the difference between a 7-minute and an 8-minute? Ovation.
Like the Rotten Tomatoes scores? It's like, that got an 80, that got a 7 and 9.
And it's really, all it means is that the audience clapped through the credits. It's all about how long the credits are.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I've also got to say, I mean, I know this is a festival, so it's slightly different. I do know, I have been in screenings, and I don't know if you guys have been in this as well, where people think that people who are filmmakers are in the room, and they're super over-enthusiastic, or when they realize that nobody is in the room. They suddenly stop. And it's
very
like
true.
There's an element of showmanship to this kind of stuff. There are movies that deserve it. There are absolutely movies that I want to stand up and cheer and clap for. Mm-hmm. However, I think there is an element of showmanship for this and kind of like being part of a swept up.
You want to stand up and cheer after a great movie? When I see a great movie, I'm kind of just like, wow, rocked in my seat. Like, I need a second. Like, go validate your parking. I'm going to sit through the credits. It hits me like a punch in the stomach. It's not something I want to be like the Shia meme.
I don't know about that.
There are times
where I want to. I mean, I remember earlier this year I saw a movie that made me want to stand up and cheer because it was over.
Which one?
Hellboy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sweet release.
Thank God.
Sweet release. No, but no, occasionally I do see a movie that does move me to the point where I'm like, almost like in a theatre, I do want to do it. And I know that I don't come from that kind of background in the UK. If you do that, people will sit the fuck down. But, you know, it is something that happens here more. But I do wonder if there's an element of showmanship. There are many movies that people have done that for, and then when they've gone back and revisited, they're like, yeah, that was a 3-star movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm very, very curious to see Joker.
No, that one, it looks amazing. I'm 100% there.
Let's have a look at what people are saying in the chat in response to our discussions there. Carson Bertrand is saying, Parasite is my most anticipated movie of the year. Xeno Hour Parasite sounds great. Yash, yeah, you LA folk are wild. Oh, I don't know. Straight Edge Vegan Bell, hi, Jeff. I can't wait to watch your match tonight. You having a match tonight?
I guess so. I don't
know.
You
are now.
I don't know when these things air.
Lick My Love Pump. I saw a Parasite poster outside my movie theater. I assume it's going to get a theatrical release. I'm intrigued by this movie. Yeah. Being intrigued is great. And Yash saying Matthew Rhys is amazing. Matthew Rhys is amazing. And I'm just, you know, still amazed that Hollywood hasn't used him more, especially off the popularity of the Americans as well. Cammy Egan, I was so moved by the documentary Won't You Be My Neighbor that it made me reminisce about my childhood and how much I loved Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing piece of TV that I had to discover on VHSs that I had shipped over from the US. It just wasn't on TV in the UK.
Yeah.
But I was a massive nerd, so what do you, you know, what are you going to do?
my Mr. Rogers
I loved American
tapes.
Culture, so that's what I used to do. That was some kids were smuggling porn to like get porn. I was like, have you got some good Mr. Rogers? Have you got any good Mr. Rogers stuff?
How good a day is
I'm
it
looking
in
for
the
a really realistic, helpful message. Someone that'll inspire me and make me a better person.
What is that?
I don't know. Xeno Hour, I think apparently I was a 70-year-old man from Brooklyn when I was a child. Xeno Hour, I think Lucas Hedges will get a tentpole role soon. Lucas Hedges has had a number of great roles, but it just doesn't... I don't know what is happening with that, because audiences aren't... They're just not getting it the same way that I think people in the industry are getting Lucas Hedges. And I do wonder when there's going to be that click moment.
If. You know,
I
honestly.
I hope there will be. Jeff, what do you think on that? Lucas Hedges. The great Lucas Hedges debate.
I think it's just a matter of time. The same way that,
Probably,
we just saw Chalamet get Dune.
Yeah.
You know, I think he'll get something along those lines.
Someone here saying, this is from a Lick My Love Pump. I stood and clapped and cheered after seeing Lawrence of Arabia. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Yash saying, my biggest criticism of Joker since the start was Todd Phillips, but apparently Bradley Cooper, the producer, showed him a thing or two behind the camera. I was always very surprised that Todd Phillips was given this job, but I'm very, very interested to see the results.
Weirdly, I'm not. I've always liked Todd. I think he has a cynical, just this, in all his movies, he has a very cynical, dark feel. And even in The Hangovers, which were comedies, but they were some of the darkest.
Darkness. Yeah.
I actually think he's kind of perfect for it. And I was excited once he got cast. Signed up for it, I was like, I'm in.
Good point. Xeno Hour, we're going to move on from this in just a second. Xeno Hour saying, Simon, there seems to be three groups that are divided on the Joker. One side thinks it's a groundbreaking film. The other side thinks it will inspire bad people. The third group actually saw it. King Sportcull, when I was a teen and saw Taxi Driver, I clapped to myself after it was over. That's fair. I've done that. We've all sat there at home and watched a movie and clapped, right?
Absolutely.
Jeff's like, no, what the
fuck
is wrong with you?
I don't know if I've been clapping.
He snaps. He does that whole thing.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Because you're woke, Jeff. Okay, quickly, I want to talk about something that broke in the last couple of days. There was a response to the ongoing debate, the spy debate.
Simon's got friggin' printouts
I printed
here.
I know. Yeah.
He's prepared.
If he'd have got into the studio a little earlier, I would have managed to add this onto my sheet. But
it
I
looks
didn't.
Nice.
So I just printed it off.
First page is just a giant headline.
I like the way that the images have come out.
It's
I think
so
that is particularly good.
They're beautiful.
Show that to the camera.
Wow.
So obviously, one of the Sony Pictures chief was talking about the Spider-Man split, something that's been, you know, going on for a couple of weeks now. And according to him, he's saying for the moment the door is closed on Spider-Man being part of the MCU. That, I think, is something that's been long discussed. But what I want to talk about very quickly is whether you think, because obviously Spider-Man is now going to be out of the MCU, which kind of limits the amount of Spider content we're going to get.
Yeah.
Do you think Tom Holland is going to...
I just wanted to read this the piece.
Go ahead. Okay, cool. It's very good from Variety.
No, I need to brush up on one of the quotes. Go ahead.
Okay, so I think I'm wondering, is it going to become something that Tom Holland as Spider-Man, because obviously he's going to be doing the Spider movies,
yeah,
and not part of the greater MCU, does the role of Spider-Man remain as attractive, or is it something he'll go like, actually, maybe I don't want to be tied to this for another couple of movies. I want to exit Spider-Man and do something else.
I can't imagine that. Honestly, I mean, yeah, I know there's a lot of... For the business side, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's a lot of confusion, a lot of frustration. But now, for an actor, the chance to play Spider-Man is a chance to play Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anyone would be like, yeah, no, I don't want to deal with this stuff.
Yeah, I love this idea that, like, Marvel made, like, Spider-Man. Like the Spider-Man was a huge character before the MCU
and
all that
stuff.
His
and had a number of very successful movies.
Yes!
Not the ones Andrew Garfield in, but, yeah.
How dare you? Those are my favorite.
But, like, when you read this article, I love that Tony Fonseca cannot help himself. It's like, the door is closed for the moment.
There is no never in Hollywood, ever.
Exactly. Vince Aguirre cryptically added that it's a long life. Hey, it's a long life. Anything could happen, guys.
Life is like a box of chocolates.
It's like they're either in denial or they just can't help themselves with this stuff. Like I have said all along, like I think that they'll be able to figure something out eventually.
I don't think it'll be a case of a couple of years, but I could very much see this returning. I think there's too much benefit over.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see how the next movie performs. Yeah. It'll be as simple as that.
Yeah,
you're right. If it doesn't make $1 billion this time, they'll know why.
BlackRock316, I'm glad Spider-Man is going back to being focused on the character. I was just over the MCU character in the Spider-Man movie after Far From Home. Lick my love pump. Tom is obligated. He can't taint his legacy by being a whiny baby.
Yeah.
I don't think really a lot of this is to do with people being whiny babies. I think a lot of this is people in offices who have the conversations about contracts and stuff like that. And, you know, actors just say yes or no. So I don't think it's necessarily Tom being potentially being a whiny baby.
I think it's
really about suits and zeros and ones.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think it's about how fans just have no idea to react, how to react to these things. And Tom Holland is being asked the kinds of questions that, like, he just wouldn't have been asked, you know, years ago.
You're right.
And it's like these guys just don't know what to say. And they're put on the spot for these answers, and, you know, shame on some of the bloggers who are, you know, putting them on the spot with this stuff.
My favorite example of that at D23 was you know, someone who I know, and she's delightful, asked Jeff Goldblum about this on the carpet at D23, and Jeff Goldblum was literally, I mean, trying to get sense out of Jeff Goldblum at any time,
right.
You know, as much as I love him, it's like just almost impossible. But he obviously didn't know a huge amount about this, and it was kind of like, it was like if you had a Scrabble bag of words and you just emptied it and then they came out of Jeff Goldblum's mouth. It was that. It was absolutely... It made no sense whatsoever.
Because most people play characters and they don't have to worry about, like, the rights of those characters and who owns it. And it's just... It's not something an actor really has to concern themselves with.
And why should they? I mean, they're hired to play a role.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
But it's because, you know, fans these days expect you to be that character, like, all the time now. Like, Tom Holland walks down the street and people think, oh, that's Spider-Man.
It's like the old back in the 70s and 80s had the soap operas. They got so invested in there, like, those people weren't really those people. That it's becoming like that in Hollywood. It's weird.
They're also certainly out there editorially. They're the most accessible. I mean, if you're doing a press tour and you got two movies out a year, every single time that Robert Pattinson, like, coming up for The Lighthouse, everybody's going to ask him about fucking Batman.
Yeah.
So I think the thing is, they're not going to talk to anybody else involved in Batman because they can't get to them, but that person's right in front of them.
I feel like it's not even that because...
Oh, interesting. I mean, you're wrong, obviously.
I mean, it's like those used to be the settings where a celebrity would you know, hold court, and every few months you might hear from a celebrity because they had a movie to promote. These days, you're bombarded by fans with cameras, and everyone's just asking you all the time. I feel like I hear from Tom Holland year round, and most celebrities year round, and there's no break to it, and that's why they get put in these situations where they have to answer, like, more stuff than they should really have to.
It's like low pay, no pay TMZ. but for movies. Okay, we'll move on from that. Let's talk about... this is an announcement this week that I was not expecting. The Tomb Raider sequel set for 2021. And Free Fire filmmaker Ben Wheatley is going to direct it. Now, I'm not entirely surprised there was a Tomb Raider sequel.
No.
I didn't dislike the first movie. Was it amazing? I enjoyed
fine.
It. Yeah. It was fun.
Fine.
And it did okay. It wasn't a huge blockbuster, but it did okay. So I'm not surprised there's a sequel. What I am surprised about is Ben Wheatley is going to be directing this. Jimmy, first of all, your thoughts on this?
I'm excited.
Okay.
I really enjoyed that the other film, and I think he has a real eye for creating fun violence.
Mm.
Like, I really enjoyed that movie. It was a small... I'm blanking on the title.
Free Fire?
Free Fire. I for some reason, I could never get that title right. I love the energy there. He got a lot of good performances out of actors who I usually think are a little, But I think... I don't know. I think it's an... I like when they take a blockbuster and they give it to someone who has done some kind of action. Not just... I'm not talking about someone who did a little independent film with two people talking and suddenly they're doing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know? I'm talking about a guy who's done low-budget action. He knows how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, look at the guys who do John Wick. Look at them now.
So... But his resume is so diverse, and even from his really low budget stuff. I mean, I remember when Ben did his very first movie that was like no budget, and there was like no. And I actually produced the junket for it at a production company I was working for in London. Yeah,
that's cool.
And it was like it didn't do a lot of business, and it was a really small movie, but it got him to do things like Kill List, and then that obviously led to things like A Field in England and all these other movies. And then obviously, you know, Free Fire, I think, is the one that possibly people most know from Ben Wheatley's work.
Kill List, though, I think that's one
Kill List is. Yeah. Is one that really sort of people like really sat up and noticed Ben Wheatley.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting that they've got someone like him who is great visually. I love his visual style and I love the way that he develops characters. Mm-hmm. But to put it on this blockbuster video game character, I mean, I'm always hopeful that we see some of these video game characters actually really in a film has gravitas.
Yeah.
You know, and not just be, you know, pleasing for button punchers who, you know, would be kind of perhaps sometimes more willing to just accept their favorite characters on screen in whatever form. So I think it's a really interesting take on this. I mean, Jeff, do you like Ben's work?
No.
Okay.
Oh, no. So you're a fan then?
No, not particularly. I couldn't stand his last two movies, High Rise and Free Fire. I couldn't stand either one of them.
Oh, High Rise is I kind of
My favorite is Sightseers, and I think Kill List is all right.
Sightseers is great.
Tomb Raider, I did not bother to see the first film, so it didn't really matter. Unless Christopher Nolan was directing the sequel, I wasn't going to see it anyways.
Right.
Ben Wheatley is not a guy who excites me for it. I think that he's a decent hire in the sense that, like you said, he does have a voice as a filmmaker. I will grant him that. He has a certain visual style, and I think that he will be able to bring in this sequel for maybe less than the first film cost.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he, you know, does a good job making high quality stuff with a low budget.
Yeah.
So you know, in that sense, I think that it'll work well, but like, what I really think about this announcement is that it shows how desperate MGM has become. They did Child's Play, which I liked this summer, but Child's Play did not take off.
Yeah. You like Child's Play? Really?
I thought Child's Play was okay. It was better than I was expecting.
Okay.
Didn't work for them, though. They did the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels remake, The Hustle, right?
Terrible.
That did not work for them.
That was
terrible. So, like, they're looking through their library titles, and they're like, oh, we should do this, we should do this, we should do this. And then they're like, eh, you know what? What if we just made a sequel to Tomb Raider? Like, we didn't lose any money on that one.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. I don't think anybody is particularly excited for this. I don't think I haven't heard anybody raving about the first film. Some people liked it, some people didn't like it. But either way, this franchise is completely irrelevant to me.
Interesting.
Well, okay.
I mean, personally, with Ben Wheatley, there are some movies that he's done that I really liked and some that I really didn't like. When Kill List came out, I was not a fan of Kill List. Sightseers, I loved. A Field in England, the first time I was like, I don't think I like this. Watched it a couple more times because it still interested me, and I've actually really come to really like that movie. But
yeah.
I'm very curious to see this. There was a movie that Ben was attached to a couple of years ago that involved Charlize Theron and like cops and monsters that kind of never really came to fruition.
Yeah.
So I'm disappointed that he's not continuing with that project, but I'll be very interested to see what he does.
Was that Freak Shift or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was about 2 or 3 years ago.
That sounded interesting.
It sounded really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
he's a guy who I pay attention to. Like, I will see his work, but I can't say I'm excited about it.
One thing I know you are excited about, Bad Boys for Life.
Life.
For Life. The trailer this week dropped. I cannot deny I really like the first Bad Boys movie. It's Bad Boys came out at a great time. It was perfect timing. I literally did, seriously. I found a picture of me when Bad Boys came out, and I used to have long hair and curtains. I used to have a shitload of hair.
I need to see this.
Seriously, I used to have a shitload of hair. Most of it's now on my back and my ass, but I used to have a load of it. But yeah, Bad Boys came out at the perfect time. Bad Boys 2 did pretty well. Didn't perform, you know, perhaps some people had expected. It's taken a long time to make this third film come to fruition. And I'll be honest with you, I was genuinely worried about it because they're both older. Their stars have shifted in the world of Hollywood. I didn't know if we needed it. Action movies often get mishandled by Hollywood. This, though, when I saw the trailer drop this week, I am really, really excited about this movie. For me, I think this is going to be like early next year's Hobbs and Shaw equivalent, which is dumb, fun.
Too long?
We'll get to that
was
later.
Good timing by Thank Jimmy you. O.
But I just think it's going to be a really nice little, especially when it's being released, a really nice little palate cleanser, a little bit of cinematic sorbet. Jeff on this, first of all, Bad Boys for Life.
Bad Boys for Life. Well, I love Bad Boys, not a huge Bad Boys 2 guy.
What you going
to
do?
I am excited to see Mike Lowry and Marcus Burnett back together again.
Yeah.
These guys have a fun chemistry, but man, Martin Lawrence is looking long in the tooth. They need that like Joe Pesci type person to come in and like reinvigorate the franchise. There's no third wheel here. They have the young guns they introduced at the very end of the trailer.
Yeah.
None of whom particularly seem interesting to me. There was no setup of what the story is or the villain, like a new love interest. It was just playing on the chemistry, and I suppose that was smart. But again, I'm looking forward to this because I do like these characters in this franchise. But to say I'm excited about it, no.
Do you know what? Part of the reason I think I'm excited about it is the fact that I think where it's going to be placed in the calendar, and I think over the next couple of months we have a lot of very serious movies, awards season, and it's just going to be something for me that it's going to be a movie that I genuinely want to see because I want to see it, rather than I want to see it because I need to be informed for what I do for a living.
Okay.
So I do genuinely love the characters, and I think that, you know, Will Smith's having something of a renaissance at the moment, and Martin Lawrence is available. Jimmy, your thoughts on this?
What I can say about Bad Boys in general is thank God for Bad Boys because it gave me Hot Fuzz. I'm not really a huge Bad Boys fan. I was watching the trailer and I keep looking at Martin and I'm like, is he going to do the whole, I was just supposed to retire in a week or whatever. It's
pretty generic and formulaic.
It's very generic. It looks like Fast and Furious Light. I mean, you know, it is what it is.
It gets a lot of mileage out of the song, too. Just like a lot of jokes, a lot of gags.
Although that last one's funny. I like when they're all doing it and no, those are wrong.
You will never do that again.
Will I see it? Probably.
Yeah.
Probably see it opening weekend just because out of curiosity. But yeah, I don't know.
Simon, you're right, though. I think that the release date is smart. Yeah. It's January, which is not typically a good sign, but that means it could have the month to itself, so to speak.
Yeah.
The same way that Glass was a big hit in January, and I think that you're right. After all these awards movies that we see through November and December, it may be the perfect movie, like just dumb fun to see in January.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be fun because January is generally a down month for people. They've come out of the holidays and, you know, the new year and everything. I just think it's going to be really nice. So, King's Portal Cal in the chat saying, Mac Lowry. Kameh Egan, I enjoyed the first Bad Boys, but the trailer for the third movie, Martin Lawrence looks bored as if he didn't want to make the film. I think Martin Lawrence wanted to make the film a number of years ago.
Yeah.
I think he's been very ready to make that movie. BlackRock 316, Will Smith is going to have to carry this movie. Martin comes across like he's a bit rusty. I think he is a bit rusty.
I'm sure.
King saying Lawrence looks kind of bad. Martin Lawrence looks rough. Senor Nerd, Bad Boys for Life trailer was like Blue Chew for me. I'm not quite sure what that is. And Xeno Hour, the third wheel character for Bad Boys for Tom Holland, Spider-Man, lol.
Sony gets him in there.
But I think a lot of people are going to get this. But the Bad Boys theme playing on the theme tune, I know. I don't know how popular Cops
bad
is with
boys.
People.
I think it's so popular.
We'll see. Yeah. But I was just really super psyched to see that dropping in a time when we're getting to a lot of serious movies. I was like, that looks fun.
I'm so happy for you right now. Really. I am.
I'm happy for Martin Lawrence. Okay, so let's touch on a couple of things that broke this week that I want to run through quickly. Vince Vaughn's going to become a teenage girl in a new Blumhouse body-swapping thriller from the Happy Death Day director. We knew he was doing a horror movie a couple of weeks ago that was announced, and that we didn't really know what it was. But this is kind of like...
I'm curious.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? Why not?
Body swap movies are one of my favorite genres, because in the 80s
and they
were like
they don't
a load
do
of them.
Like horror generally. It's usually a comedy, like Freaky Friday.
Yeah,
so.
Or Vice Versa, or Big. Mm-hmm. I love the way the fact I go to Vice Versa before I go to Big.
Yeah.
Judge Reinhold and Fred Savage. What a great movie that was.
The greatest.
I think that
Vince Vaughn and Catherine Newton are good performers for this.
Yeah.
The idea of Vince Vaughn playing a teenage girl.
I've always thought of him as a teenage girl, though, really.
Yeah, on the inside. Yeah. And yeah, Happy Death Day. I think the first film was fun. I didn't really care for the second one.
See, I liked the second one a lot. I got a lot of heat, but like, I thought it was fun. I thought it was really fun. I liked that it didn't just play the same cards. It kind of went the Back to the Future route. I love that. And she made those movies.
See,
I wasn't
a fan of the second Happy Death Day movie. The first one I really, really loved. The second one I was not a fan of, unfortunately. Wow. I know it's kind of one of the more divisive movies of the year. But no, I do like the idea of Vince Vaughn doing something like this. He's played with a couple of really interesting roles that haven't been massively financially successful, I think he's used it as a kind to take a step back, hone some of the skills that he wasn't, you know, perhaps well known for, really go away, develop those, and come back to something like this. So
his best work is the smaller films, period.
Yeah. Jeff, you lot, you were going to say something on this.
I mean, I don't think Vince Vaughn's really done a part like this maybe since Psycho.
Yeah.
Since the Psycho remake.
That probably was the last...
I really like Brawl in Cell Block 99 and Dragon Cross Concrete and even Hacksaw Ridge. He was really good in that film, too.
Agreed.
And True Detective, I liked him in. He gets a lot of flack for that season. But I don't know. Vince Vaughn, I think this is sort of the perfect evolution of, you know, his career. The lead in a Blumhouse movie sounds good. And I like how Blumhouse is playing with these high concept ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like have like the main, they have certain like IPs that they, you know, play it straight. And then they have these sort of fun one-offs, and you know, I'd always heard that they were doing one called 7 Minutes in Heaven, potentially with the kid from Stranger Things, Steve.
Okay.
Joe Keery. And I wondered what that would look like.
For sure.
But it never came together, I don't think.
It's interesting the way that sort of Blumhouse is positioning itself, because it's positioned itself almost in one way for quite a while, but it really is becoming quite a bit more diverse with these, you know, these sort of new takes on these classic tropes, still doing some of their bread and butter type movies, but also obviously we know from The Craft and other projects that they've looked at doing, they are trying to develop some of these IPs as well. I mean, Halloween and stuff like that. Blumhouse Corner! Welcome by the first time Jeff to Blumhouse Corner. But yeah, they are definitely trying to do this kind of thing. They almost have like a three-pronged attack. And then obviously Jason Blum is still exec producing a lot of movies that are non-horror movies.
Yeah.
So being involved in various other things as well.
You know what I like about him? The thing that makes him interesting to me...
Jason,
he loves movies.
Yeah.
It is clear that he has a passion. A lot of these guys that run the studios,
they
don't give a crap about... Mm. Oh, I can swear. They don't give a shit about movies. They don't care. Yeah. And they just want to make money. Jason loves genre. He loves anything. He's a film connoisseur, and I love that. And I and he's got passion, energy, and excitement.
He's 100% consumed in whatever he's doing.
Absolutely.
Whether he's talking to you in a room and he's 100% focused on that, and then when that's done, he's on his phone and he's working on that, and then when something else happens, he's focused on that. He has such incredible focus, and I get to speak to him a couple of times a year, and I genuinely look forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
He's part of that Richard Linklater project too. That's going to be shooting until
Simon is
90-year-old man.
And obviously, he had an involvement. It wasn't a Blumhouse movie, but he had an involvement in Jordan Peele's Us, which, by the way, you'll love this. I went around the Us maze at Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios Hollywood yesterday. Mm. So I had a little look around that. That is going to be really good. Take spare pants if you're going to go around that this year.
Spare pants.
It launches next week, Halloween Horror Nights.
I take spare pants everywhere I go.
Okay. He does. He's got them all right.
I'm incontinent.
He's changed twice since we've been here. It's amazing.
but yeah, it looks really good. Jordan Peele is actually going to check out the Us Maze
Jordan Peele will be popping out every 10 minutes in the southeast corner of the maze.
That's going to be amazing. Dink. I can't wait.
But yeah, so he's going to be actually at Universal today checking out that maze, which is going to be good. So he's going to give it his seal of approval. But I highly recommend that. But yeah, no, I think this is a really interesting project for Blumhouse. There are a couple of other things I know that Jason and the team are looking at, which are pre-existing IPs, movies that they want to buy and remake.
Ooh, tell me off air.
I will tell you off air. But yeah, so I think this will be really interesting. So yeah, cool.
Can't wait.
A couple of other things I want to touch on very quickly. We have 20 minutes left on the show. There's a story this week about the Crazy Rich Asian sequel having some problems because Adele Lim has apparently left the project over a pay disparity. I mean, this is an ongoing issue with you know, pay in the industry, and it's kind of more pressing here because obviously the first Crazy Rich Asians movie was such a runaway success. Domestically, internationally, it was interesting how that played. China and some of the Asian markets, it didn't do as well as I think they expected. Yeah. But obviously, the market is different there because in those markets you see representation on screen in a everyday basis.
It's not exceptional
in those markets. Over here it is slightly different. But yeah, I mean, do you think this is gonna, how do you think this is gonna affect the project, Jeff? Do you think, is it just to slip someone else in, or, you know, what do we do with this? What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I don't know if, like, are they still negotiating? Like, is she just not involved? Is she trying to get them to come up? I don't understand whether there's any finality to the situation or not.
Is it a power play, do you think, or is it,
I mean, a power play?
Because I looked at the figures that were reported this week, and obviously, you know, you have to take some of those with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
But the difference between the two salaries for her and the male writer were noticeable. There was quite a difference between
the two. Which I thought it was too skewed. Like, I could actually understand Pete Chiarelli making more than her, but, like, if you have a $900,000 to split between these writers, I don't see how it's $800,000 to $100,000 if they're co-writers, you know? And I think that, you know, THR did good reporting on this, and, you know, someone had sort of said that, you know, some writers of color sort of being hired as soy sauce to just sprinkle on cultural specificities.
Yeah,
good job.
And, you know, I hope that that's not the case in which Adele Lim is being used. I don't think that it was, and I think that she recognizes her own value to the project. And yeah, it just seemed a little too skewed for my liking. I think that Warner Brothers, you know, they could have avoided all this bad PR too. Mm. Like, is this bad PR worth it? Not, like, I just don't understand Toby Emmerich and the whole, like, setting the precedent. He didn't want his business affairs team to set the precedent, and I'm like, well, this is not a good precedent to set either, dude.
Your thoughts on this, Jimmy?
I agree with him. I also think it, you know, when it finally does get made, most people aren't going to care. I mean, honestly, they're just going to see the movie that they want to see. It will get made at some point. It would be nice if they could have them both involved and she could return and it would be actually fair pay.
Yeah.
But to your average audience, I don't think they're going to care.
They don't care about the backroom stuff. They genuinely don't. I just want to go to the chat. A few things people talking about. We were talking about Blumhouse and Vince Vaughn joining a Blumhouse project. Lick My Love Pump, Like Father, Like Son is the Citizen Kane of body swap movies. That's something you don't hear very often.
Oh, yeah.
Where were you when they were printing the posters? Kingsport Cal, Vince Vaughn is my boy. Kama Egan, a deep cut body swap movie, 18 again with George Burns and Charlie Schlatter. God, I remember that movie.
Yeah.
It went straight to video, I think, in the UK. Zeno Hour Vince Vaughn was a bright spot in True Detective Season 2. Zeno Hour Simon, I believe, 7 Minutes in Heaven actually was released, or at least filmed. Zeno Hour googled and said that Blumhouse did release Seven in Heaven last year. Sounds like it's
really?
7 Minutes in Heaven movie that Jeff was talking about.
Wait, is Joe Keery in that?
Don't know. We should check that out.
I'm shocked.
Do a Google. Lick My Love Pump. Jason Blum is awesome. He's a national treasure. Absolutely.
Yes, I agree.
Kingsport Cal saying VV is a good film. It was in a good film. Vince Vaughn was in a good film called Return to Paradise. I wasn't a fan of that movie, but I know a lot of people did like it. It wasn't widely seen.
Zeno, Travis I think, Tope.
Talking about the Crazy Rich Asians, where's the WGA? Interesting. Eon 001, the argument for low pay among women is because they don't ask for a pay rise. The lady asks for a pay rise and they don't give it to her. It's insulting. I hope the cast boycotts. I don't don't know if there'll be a boycott. I don't think that'll happen.
I think so.
It's certainly a good gig for a lot of those people. But I'll be honest with you, as much as I enjoyed Crazy Rich Asians, I was absolutely fine with that story being left as a standalone. I know there are more books. I think I would probably more be inclined to go and say, why don't Warner Brothers not make this as a movie, but turn it into a series?
That's a good idea. Yeah, that's a great
idea. I'm like saying this increasingly with projects. Well, Warner Brothers are doing their own streaming platform in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
So why not have something like this and create that, and then you don't have to worry about it. It's cheaper to pay TV writers. You know, you can do it in a slightly different production schedule. You can swap out characters if you need to, if you can't maintain the contracts with these people. I also think it would be something that, you know, rather than being a lightning in a bottle moment every couple of years for a movie, why not spread it out and you make it as a TV show?
Especially
and then,
a show like that. I mean, you could do a lot with
that. I think
that.
It would work.
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
I think it really would work. You know? So I think maybe you should do that, Warner Brothers. If you do, I'd like some money.
Yes.
But I'd like it to be parody. Okay, we have 50 minutes left on the show. Something else I want to talk about very quickly. Terminator Dark Fate, intended to kick off a new trilogy, apparently. This coming from James Cameron this week, because obviously that worked before.
Yeah.
Terminator Dark Fate, still a title I'm not a big fan of, but as I see more of the footage, which I've now stopped watching, I'm actually I'm quite looking forward to this movie. I think this might be the Terminator movie that we've been waiting for, but I have also said that about the last couple of Terminator movies, which turned out to be utterly
really?
No, genuinely, I thought The Salvation was going to be a great Terminator movie, and I did not like that movie.
Oh,
I revisited it, and it doesn't get any better.
No.
And I revisited Terminator Genesis, and I actually only got halfway through it this time. I couldn't give it the entire runtime, and it was not a particularly long movie. That whole film was just a horrible mess. Terminator Dark Fate, should it be a benchmark, or should it be the start of a new trilogy? Very quickly on this, guys.
Can we just wait to see how it does? I mean, honestly, like my thing with this is, my problem with Terminator with all the sequels, it was missing Linda Hamilton.
Yeah,
she was as much of a part of that franchise as Schwarzenegger, if not more. She was better in part two than he was. She was the standout in part two. So once they got rid of her, it's like, who cares?
Yeah.
I lost a lot of interest in it. I didn't like the sequels. So yeah, no. But I don't know. Let's just see how it does before we move into sequel. Like,
yeah, I mean, you have to assume that it's intended to start a trilogy.
Of
otherwise, why would they
trilogy.
Make it?
Yeah, now everything's a trilogy.
Yes. I mean, you know, they got to make money, and Paramount doesn't have, you know, the IP that a lot of places have.
They don't.
I think Dark Fate looks good.
Yeah,
I am looking forward to it. I think Tim Miller is a cool director. I didn't love Deadpool.
What?
Okay. No, but this looks a lot darker and more up his alley.
Yeah.
How dare you?
No, I mean, I personally really like Deadpool, and I wasn't entirely sure about him being added to this project, but from what I've seen of it so far, I'm looking forward to it.
It looks interesting.
And I hope it does work for Paramount, because they've had a couple of great movies in the last couple of years that just haven't landed particularly well with audiences, and they've had a lot of stinkers.
Yeah.
And I think we really need to balance that out a bit.
Well, they don't know what they have.
Movie.
I mean, when they have a movie like Crawl, which literally, I was talking with Perry Nemiroff, that was maybe the best studio movie of the summer.
Oh, it's excellent. Excellent film.
Up there.
That summer, for me, is the movie that taught me the most about plumbing all year.
I know,
which
right?
Which always great. So
yeah.
I do like that, to come away with a skill from each movie. Guys, before we go to talk about It Chapter 2 and the box office, top three movies that you're looking forward to this fall. Jimmy, can I have your three first?
Gosh,
please?
I was trying to think about that. I guess The Joker. I'm excited for people to see a movie called The Current War, because it came out in TIFF a couple of years ago, and it was forced out.
Mm.
The movie is much better now. It's a fantastic little film. Beautiful. Beautifully shot. Alfonso Gomez Rajan.
That's
I cannot
easy for
talk.
You to say.
I'm sorry, Alfonso. I think it's a great cast. You have Benedict Cumberbatch. It's a really interesting story about Thomas Edison. I'm not going to say any more names because I'll just mess them up. But it's a really interesting film, and I hope people give it another shot.
Yeah.
I'm excited for Rambo.
Yeah.
That's the other one. I'm sorry, I am.
I'm not going to deny it.
It's all right. You're allowed.
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Alfonso. I'm sorry.
I had more than three, naturally. Joker. Yep. Waves is getting great reviews out of the festivals. I want to see that. Yep. Knives Out is going to be playing Toronto soon. Yep. Ryan Johnson's Murder Mystery. Uncut Gems, the Adam Sandler crime drama. I am pumped for that. That sounds great.
Yep.
Queen and Slim, I have my eye on. That's going to be at AFI. The Good Liar is the old person movie of the year that looks fantastic.
Okay.
That's with Helen Mirren and Magneto.
Magneto.
And then the one that everyone will surely overlook, since I don't think it's really getting much of a theatrical release, if one at all, but Jay and Silent Bob Reboot.
Really?
Yep. I love Jay and Bob, Silent Bob. I love Strike Back. You know, I like Kevin Smith. I love these characters. Are,
yeah. Okay, I mean, there's a couple. I think Irishman is probably something that everybody wants to see. Joker is one that everybody wants to see.
Yeah.
Parasite is on my list. Knives Out is very much a movie that I want to see this season. And I'll be honest with you, there was a comedy that I was not aware of, and this year has been really poor on comedies, like last year, actually. It's a movie called Jexy. I think that's the title.
That's one of your three movies, you saying?
That's one of my... It's more than three. Like you.
Okay. He has a few.
Jexy is a comedy that we have had so few effective comedies this year. I could count them and still have spare fingers on one hand. Mm-hmm. I'm really holding out for a very good comedy this year, and I think this could be, and again, in a quarter that I think is going to be quite heavy, I think this is going to be something that is just going to be dumb, fun, slightly stupid. It's not going to be PC, and I think that's just going to be a bit of fun. So I'm actually genuinely, not because it's high art, like, you know, Rambo is not high art, but you're looking
Rambo's
forward to
high
it.
Art.
Yeah, that's like your opinion, man.
Yeah.
I actually had a conversation about Rambo this week, and I did try and frame it in a certain way, and they were like, it's not that. I was like, okay. Jexy's a movie that I'm looking for. I like Adam Devine, and I think that he hasn't had the Hollywood vehicle that he deserves yet, and I'm hoping that this could potentially be it. And I think some of the comedy this
not
year
not even
has been
that movie he did with Zac Efron about the wedding dates.
Not a great
come
movie.
On. I
not
know. Yeah,
Okay, so those are some of the movies that we're looking forward to this fall. Okay, so we have just under 10 minutes left on the show.
Oh my gosh.
Let's talk about It Chapter 2. That's the movie that's going to dominate this week. It's really the only big release coming out.
Yeah.
It's looking at a weekend, some are saying 105, other people are saying 120. I think it's going to do like 135 this weekend.
I think so.
I think it's going to be up, but I think the drop-offs are going to be quite heavy. Previews, it did 10.5 million.
Wow.
Which I think it was from, going from Box Office Mojo, is 3,700 locations, which is behind the 13.5 previews for the previous entry. But I do know a lot of people who have bought tickets in advance for this weekend, mm-hmm. so I think that's going to be a big contributor to, you know, quite a high yield this opening weekend. Box office, very quickly, do you think that's about right? What are your predictions for this, Jeff? Do you think?
I'm going to let Jimmy go first.
Yeah, okay. I think it'll be a little bigger. I'm thinking about 135, 140.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know many people that don't at least want to see this.
Yeah.
I don't know many people. And, you know, it's one of those things. The first film was such a huge hit that... Yeah, I think it'll do really well. And I don't think it's going to have the drop-off that you do.
Interesting. No. Jeff, your thoughts on this?
I think I'm going to take the under.
Okay.
I think you can see it in the numbers in the tracking since, like, a month ago. Like, you know, as soon as the first tracking numbers came out, within minutes, another trade came out and the numbers were, like, inflated. Mm. I think that they've been managing expectations on this for weeks. Mm. I think that the first film just wasn't very good. Just very, very simply, I don't think it's a good movie. I think you're crazy if you think it is. And that it's going to result in more box office
opinion,
for this. I think you're going to see it come in around 105, 110.
Interesting. Okay, well, we'll see where it lands this weekend. I'm certainly watching it very keenly. Some very quick reviews on this. I'll be honest with you, It Chapter 2, something that a lot of people are saying, and it's something that I very much felt, for me, it's almost an hour over long.
So long.
I think it's a lot of the scares that are in there, some are very ineffective, for considering how well Pennywise was handled in the first movie. I think he was horribly mishandled as a character in this movie, and I think a lot of the scares were cheap, whether they were cheap actual scares or whether some of the visuals I thought were just really, really terrible. The images that were meant to shock, some of them I just thought were just looked really, really cheap. Mm. For me, I think that everybody knows the movie has a lot of flashbacks in it. Mm. This is no spoilers, by the way. For me, that completely spoiled the pace of the movie. It didn't flash back to things that we'd seen. There was too much that we hadn't seen. The chemistry of the younger cast was far better than the chemistry of the older cast. Didn't really have enough time to get to know them as established characters like we did with the young cast in the first movie. I don't think the script was as good. I think it was trying to manufacture scares and things coming kind of more atmospheric, which spoiled it for me. And while there were some good performances, I think some of the performances were very weak. Mm. Jessica Chastain for me was very strong, but she appeared to be in a totally different fucking movie to half the other guys.
Her character intro was, I thought, was laughable.
It was, this was not a great movie for me. Bill Hader, yeah, I know a lot of people are liking what Bill Hader's done. I think he's done a good job. But for me, it just wasn't... It was a bright spot in a very average movie.
But it was obnoxious.
Okay, Jeff, your thoughts on this? Be honest.
I thought James Ransone was the only one who just was great.
Yeah.
I liked it. Yeah, he was great.
Was
he
really was good. All this Bill Hader talk, guys. I love Bill Hader as much as the next guy. He's friggin' annoying. And he's friggin' annoying in this movie. The first 5 minutes, just like the first 5 minutes of It Chapter One, are the best part of the movie. You know, there's real dread behind those first 5 minutes. After that, it just becomes this episodic scare thing. It's the same scare over and over and over again. The movie goes on forever. Yeah, I didn't care for it.
Well, okay, I'm going to go... Yeah, I saw it in 4DX. Yeah. I love that. I loved the way it moved with the... It really worked with the film. It wasn't too much, but the fight scenes were pretty insane. But as a film, I actually really liked it.
Okay.
I grew up reading that novel. I loved the TV movie. I loved the first half of this. I did have issues with this. It's not a perfect film. I had issues with how they dealt with one specific bullying character.
Yeah.
Because he was, there's no point in him being there, actually.
Yeah.
And he's such an important part of the book and even TV movie. I think he had a bigger part. But ultimately, I don't think it's about... It's weird. It's not really scary for me. But what appealed to me was the characters.
Yeah.
I've grown with these characters. I love these characters. And I get what they're going through. It's about childhood fears, facing your fears and dealing with that. And ultimately, it connected with me. I didn't think it was too long. I felt maybe about 15 minutes too long.
Right.
Maybe that's about it. But honestly, I was moved. I was touched. I did like Bill Hader. But I agree with you on James. I think he's one of the highlights in the movie.
I like the end of Bill Hader's thread. Like, I thought that was wrapped up nicely. And there is a little a ping of emotion.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the most part.
I want to see it again. I mean, I will definitely see it again. But it's one of those movies I think I want to embrace the two together. I just love that story. I love that world. So I think fans are going to enjoy it.
I'm really looking forward to seeing fan reactions this weekend.
Absolutely.
I'm genuinely looking forward
to
seeing what... And if you are planning to see it Chapter 2, do go and see it, even if, you know, a lot of critics are saying that they don't like it.
If you can see it in 4DX,
Do you think it enhances the experience?
I do. I think 4DX usually enhances experiences. I mean, I've had really good experiences going to see these amazing, even crappy movies like The Lion King.
Right.
That, you know, I that was... slightly enjoyable because I hated that movie.
Okay.
That was terrible.
For me, I think for the movie, you're talking about, you know, having a connection with the movie. For me, one of the biggest problems with the movie, that it was lots of parts that didn't connect for me.
Okay, fair enough.
And I think there were lots of elements, and I think while I did like the ending with Bill Hader, the little twist there, I just felt that was kind of almost pointless because it didn't really... It wasn't led to in any specific way, and then I felt it was a little bit planted. I kind of guessed that what is the resolve was going to be the resolve, and the reveal was going to be the reveal. But for me, it just didn't pack that emotional connection, whereas in the movie, I genuinely felt fear and, you know, trepidy for these characters. And there was an intensity in that movie and almost like an atmosphere that was slightly claustrophobic that I simply didn't get with this one, which I think was one of the major selling points of the first movie. So
yeah.
I'm genuinely, though, looking forward to hearing what regular people think when they go and see this movie.
I honestly think it's going to have a pretty decent reaction. I think fans are going to enjoy it.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, a lot of people in the chat have a lot of chats about this. People talking about their favourite movies they're looking forward to towards at the end of the year. Mm. Lick My Love Pump, Doctor Sleep, Joker, Ad Astra. Doctor Sleep, actually, none of us mentioned that.
Oh, yeah, that one's on my list. Yeah,
new trailer drops on Sunday. Xeno Hour, speaking of the Joker, it's hypocritical that the same people who rightfully mock politicians trying to blame video games for mass shootings are now fearful the Joker will cause an incel apocalypse. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, I
do agree with that. We had a conversation about something very similar earlier today.
Yeah.
The first one had better marketing and Cary Fukunaga, absolutely. Second one looks bad. I wouldn't say it's bad, I just say it's not particularly great. Lick My Love Pump, I liked It 1, and you have to see It 2 if you liked It 1. I kind of guess you do,
yeah,
if you really want to close that out. Lick My Love Pump, no matter how bad things look, you have to finish the story that you started, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people, you know, it's... Eon001, man, freedom's overrated, Jeff Snyder. Yash saying Barry was more important to Bill Hader. They scrap a lot of Carrie's stuff. Sexual experience, perhaps? People trying to guess what the twist is. And 4DX, Yash says, makes everything better.
I agree.
Apparently it does. Guys, thank you so much for being on the show. Jim, for...
Twitter. Joe Blow, Arrow in the Head, Twitter, all that. Cameo. I'm new on Cameo. Look me up.
Fantastic. Yeah. Jeff Snyder, welcome back.
At the N Snyder, Twitter, Facebook, Cameo. You can find my stuff on Collider.com. You can check out the Snyder Cut. I'll have Scott Beck and Brian Woods, the writers of A Quiet Place, on as my guests today.
Nice.
And if you ever need a recommendation, go to the insnyder.blogspot.com.
Fantastic. Was it fun being back here?
It was great. It was a blast. Always good to work with you, Simon. And I got to get you on my own podcast
very
soon.
I would love to do that. It was nice to have you back.
Yes.
Nice to have you back. Thank you so much for coming. My name is Simon Thompson. You can find me at ShowbizSimon on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you so much. Obviously, without you guys, there is no show. Please like, subscribe, spread the word. Feel free to comment below, obviously, after the show is over. Because if you're watching this after the show is not live, then can't talk back. We can't do that. That's how world works. Thank you so much for watching. If you are going to go and see a movie this weekend, please go and see it because you want to see it and enjoy it. And please feedback your thoughts. Just because we have an opinion, it doesn't mean it's the only opinion.
Amen.
We want to hear yours as well. We really appreciate it. And just if everybody agreed on shit, that'd be really dull. Have a great week, everybody. See you next week. Take care.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.